Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon. Get ready for Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker. No matter what role you play in leadership of your organization or business, you are sure to get helpful secrets that will improve that role. Now here's your host, Dr. Robert Denker.
Hello, good day, and welcome to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and today on Leadership Leverage, we'll be exploring the topic of leadership from a very unique perspective. That is, we'll be discussing how to decode generational differences. To help us navigate this journey today, our guest has the experience and knowledge to help all of us understand these differences and, more importantly, their implications for the immediate present and for the future of leadership within organizations. I'm referring to the popular and distinguished author and international consultant, W. Stanton Smith. Over his 38-year career, Stan has held a variety of senior HR positions in public accounting, executive search, and the energy business. As a recognized expert in generational issues in the workplace, he has appeared on Bob Brinker's Money Talk and the Lehrer News Hour on PBS. In addition to having his views sought out by major news magazines and newspapers, he is a recipient of the Work Life Legacy Award, sponsored by the Families and Work Institute, the highest recognition in work-life field for cutting-edge ideas and long-term impact. Stan recently retired from Deloitte as a principal in human resources and continues his work in generational issues. He is also active in efforts to improve the treatment and care for those with Parkinson's disease. His best-selling book, entitled Decoding Generational Differences, Changing Your Mindset Without Losing Your Mind, is the focus of our dialogue today. So given all this, let's find out more. Stan, welcome to Leadership Leverage.
Great to be with you, Rob.
Yeah, it's delighted to have you with us too, Stan, and a very interesting and timely topic, I might add. And, you know, Stan, I indicated in the introduction of the show that you recently retired from Deloitte as principal and national director of cross-generational initiatives. And I wonder if you could tell our listeners the history of this role. In other words, how did it come about at the consulting firm? And did it take some time for this practice area to catch hold?
Thanks for asking that question, because I think it's rather important, the process that we went through at Deloitte. In the fall of 2000, the CEO of Deloitte was discussing changes in the workplace and the workforce with my colleague and boss, who was the head of HR at the time.
Okay.
And he said that he was sensing some differences in attitude at home. He had several children. He said to my boss, he said, there's something going on with the attitudes of my kids which goes beyond me being old and them being young. Have Stan look into it.
That's funny.
So what he did was he asked me as part of the third job he gave me, which the first two were more conventional jobs in HR. And I was skeptical, frankly, of the generational differences topic at first, but as good CPAs and consultants, we started digging into the data. Mm-hmm. And in the end, Deloitte leadership funded nearly 10 years of research to determine if the changes were real, what we could do about it. And I would say over that period, the initiative took hold gradually and took some very deep roots as we began to view talent differently and saw that behaving differently was making us a very desirable employer. And we were successful commercially.
Yeah, clearly it has taken roots, and I think for good reason and a good cause. But I was just wondering how the genesis of it, how did the practice start, and what was the impetus of the idea? So I think it's interesting to hear that it really started with a recognition within one's own family. And we're going to talk more about family in a few minutes, but I want to set the foundation for our listeners here, and I wonder if you could explain for us these common definitions that we hear out there in terms of, you know, what is a boomer? What is really Generation X? Is Generation Y the same as millennials? Maybe you can fill us in there.
Sure, I'd be glad to. The first thing I want to say is that the dates are all directional and not absolute. What has been done in this generational work is that there are time periods that create some common markers, and we more or less can say a group of people more or less think a certain way.
Okay.
Every generation has all the views known to humankind. So let me just understand that to start with. But what are we talking about? Traditionals are people born in the mid-40s and before. Baby boomers, people born in the late 1940s to early 1960s. Gen X, mid-60s to late 70s. Generation Y are millennials, which is the other word for them, early 1980s to early 1990s. And then recently a new generation has been identified called Regen. Re meaning they have to rethink and redo a lot of stuff we've done, mid-90s to the present.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's helpful, really, to begin this dialogue then about generational differences is to know really these markers, as you put it. So I have to ask a question, and it really stems from the current state of the economy, and it involves the boomers, because many thought that by now they would be looking at retirement right around the corner. But clearly, as we all know, many of our 401ks have now turned into 201ks. And at work, they find themselves interacting with folks who look a lot different than they did and do in the workplace. You know, they're sporting tattoos. They text their cube mates who might just be a few feet away in the next cube. And they watch TV on their laptops or their smartphones. So what are these old schoolers to do? Is the advice for them to run out and get a tattoo?
This is a good question, because I think for many of us who are old schoolers, and in a certain way I consider myself, this requires us to take a step back and get educated about what has happened and what's really changed the game, and determine where we must stand firm and where we need to be flexible. What does that mean? It means that I think we have to be firm as experienced business people on insisting on the quality of the work product, team play, and meeting deadlines.
Okay.
And then a little more controversially, I would say we need to be flexible on where, when, and how basic standards of quality and work and collaboration are met.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a sense of humor is probably a good one to have along with this. You know, older adults have always been scandalized by some aspect of young people's behavior. And for us, boomers, 40, 45 years ago, it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll that scandalized our parents. I don't think we should be surprised about piercings and colored hair and flip-flops today.
And that's an interesting point. And so I think what you're saying is really every generation has its issues that it brings into the organization, doesn't it?
Every generation, and the new always like to twist the tail of the old. You know that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I want to talk to you, too, because in your book you describe what you categorize as seven irreversible realities that make it virtually impossible for these good old days to return. I wonder if you can discuss some of these, but in particular, the first one, where you state that the non-traditional family unit is the rule and not the exception.
Yes, I think it's very important to start with that one. Census data in the United States show that traditional families, where the husband goes to work and the wife stays at home with the children, are a distinct minority now, probably under 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And now, there's an interesting fact. In 1950, fewer than 12% of women with children under the age of 6 were in the workforce, and two-thirds of households were traditional, meaning the husband went to work and the wife stayed at home. Now, today, both spouses work in nearly two-thirds of married couple households, and 60% of women with children under the age of 6 are working.
It has changed remarkably in that way. Absolutely.
Right. And what this means is that there's a need for flexibility in navigating career life fit issues or work-life fit issues that wasn't there when many of our today's business leaders were growing up. So it's not something they really, you know, experienced. Mm-hmm. And in addition, the workplace was designed with the traditional structure in mind, linear career paths and expectation of total dedication to work if you expected to make any progress in your career, and employees were expected to fit their lives into work rather than the other way around. And that has some profound implications as to what has changed in our workplace.
Well, and I couldn't agree with you more, and I think that leads me to ask that how have these Gen Yers then redefined their own issue of ambition and leadership in the workplace?
Well, I think that that's really an interesting one, because in some ways it's not too different from the way baby boomers have done it. It's a question of emphasis. I would say today's young people generally favor family and personal time over the rewards that usually accompany increased job responsibility.
And yeah, so, because before, I mean, it was that you fit your life into your work.
That's right, but now it's you fit work into your life. And the reason that I see that has happened, and this is based on focus groups I've had, is what is going to touch on a topic later about the attitudes towards business. These young people have witnessed their grandparents, their aunts and uncles, even their parents, find their trust in corporations and businesses was not well-founded. That's from their perspective.
Sure.
And so now they say, look, if it's going to be difficult, I might as well favor my family and personal time, because I'm certainly unsure that I'm going to get anything back from making my job the number one in my life.
So, Stan, is that then how they find success in the workplace?
Well, I think that's interesting. We, in some work we did a couple of years ago, we discovered that interesting work makes a positive difference in people's lives, and working for a company that cares, the Good Company, as it was called in one of our focus groups, that cares about its people, community, and environment, and it allows people to have some tangible control over their work lives and allows them to continue to learn and grow through a variety of quality assignments over a period of time, is really what ambition and what they're looking for in the workplace. And I think another important thing is that they want the ability to spend, without risk to their careers, quality time with their family and friends throughout the year and over a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And so as a leader in today's companies, what might be some things that they could put into place that would indeed give them that?
Well, I think one of the things we learned is basically to educate your middle management and your upper management about the changes, because some things become logical from that. For instance, the viewpoint that I mentioned earlier is that you hold firm to quality, to teamwork, and to deadlines, and then you become flexible in other things. That has to be worked out sort of team by team, company by company. But those basic values are very different than the way many companies run themselves today. And that's where I would start. What are the things that are absolutely have-to-haves? And mm-hmm. what are those things that, while traditionally maybe they were more defined by the employer, that you can be more less relentless about and find that people will repay you by loyalty, by the fact that you give them the flexibility they're looking for?
And Stan, from, you know, the years of doing this consulting and companies across not only the U.S. but the globe, what resonated with you where a company did a particular practice that you said, wow, that's pretty creative? Can you share anything with us?
I can share actually what Deloitte did in the whole area of changing careers within Deloitte. We decided that if we were going to sell these ideas, we might as well do them. And we had a group called Career Connections, mm-hmm. which allowed people to do the thing that they said they wanted to do, which was to stay with us but have different careers. And this was a group of people that facilitated understanding if you wanted to move from one section of the business to another, how that could be done, whether they were qualified and that sort of thing. And it was quite successful.
That's a great example. Any others that you can share from organizations outside of Deloitte?
I think that from our organizations outside Deloitte are many of the major corporations who really took seriously this whole idea of flexibility and allowing people to understand when they could work from home, when they couldn't work from home, under what conditions could they find ways to meet this need of flexibility and still serve the business.
So I think what you're saying is really, you know, have those job parameters pretty wide, as maybe in prior years where they were pretty narrow or pretty restrictive.
Well, I think that part of this is also an understanding of technology and how it being ubiquitous for young people has made them think that they can do work differently. And this is very important for those of us who were not raised with technology, the way these young people were.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's pick up on that issue of technology, because that's really pervasive, not just in the workplace, but in our personal lives as well. We need to take a commercial break. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. Stay with us.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory, and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
If you lead a team of any kind, you need to listen to this show. Tune in to Leading with Emotional Intelligence, hosted by Esther Orioli. Esther provides you with the tools and techniques you need to harness the power of EQ to stop setting goals and start changing behaviors in your organization. Get the latest concepts in EQ from a top-of-the-house perspective and have your questions answered on air. Leading with Emotional Intelligence is broadcast live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker. And today on Leadership Leverage, we're talking with W. Stanton Smith. And the topic is about decoding generational differences. Much of our dialogue today stems from Stan's best-selling book, which is entitled Decoding Generational Differences, Changing Your Mindset Without Losing Your Mind. Stan, before we went on commercial break, you had brought up this topic of technology, and I had indicated that it's important that we talk about this because technology has certainly become pervasive in the workplace and also in our personal lives. And in your book, you called technology the widest divide. I'm wondering if you could tell us more about this.
Sure. What I'm saying there is that the 24/7 connectivity which technology permits removes the traditional constraints of the office hours and location. It encourages networking, lack of boundaries, and makes operating in hierarchies difficult. and challenges the traditional way of doing and managing work. Those who were not raised with, as is called, ubiquitous technology of the last 30 years or so, and don't themselves heavily use technology, tend to see technology as a tool or a toy. And whereas those on the other side of this divide see technology as the way they interact with the world, and that defines the gap. And the upshot of this divide is that these technological natives, or digital natives as they're often called, believe that they should be able to work anytime, any place, and not be held to deadlines and quality expectations. In other words, evaluate me on my results, not on how I achieve the results. And that's a fundamentally different way of looking at the world.
Well, it really is, and I think that goes back to what you were saying in our first segment about how a leader really then needs to define those parameters, those sets of expectations, and then allow technology, in fact, to do what it does best, to be an enabler.
That's right. I think that with all these, sometimes the reaction of my colleagues is, well, these young people are just asking for all the toys that they can play with. And in fact, we could learn a great deal from them, because this is the one thing that may be different about this time in human history than any others. Usually, the older you got, the more you knew. Now,
right.
The older you got, the less you know.
And, well, and particularly in terms of the technology.
And we should be reverse mentoring with these young people, having them teach us, and we teach them how to be professionals.
And in a sense, I think that would go a long way to find common ground in the workplace and also be some good productivity in the sense of teaming skills, don't you think?
I really do, and I think it starts then to deal with this issue about distrust of business, which is epidemic among...
Yeah, what else? What are you really seeing out there? Maybe you can go deeper on this topic of distrust.
Well, let's first see from what the research said about what the young people are looking for. And I mentioned the good company, which is important to understand that means it pays particular attention to its people, community, environment. And the research shows that the youth appreciate the need for a business to make a profit, but they object to what they see as the major overemphasis on making money at the expense of everything else. And you can understand this from the growing up in a world of redundancies and scandals and environmental events like the disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. These young people believe that business generally, and big business in particular, value their own gain far above all else, and the business talk about importance of people is largely insincere. Let me put some numbers with that. 70% of the 14 to 24-year-olds who were surveyed agreed with that statement, that mm-hmm. business is just basically not disingenuous about its putting people first, which is not a good place to be.
No, it isn't. And in some areas, there's some truth to that. I mean, they've got a legitimate concern. I think even today, when you take a look at the economy, you find those in very senior positions in leadership doing quite well. In fact, they're having a party in terms of the profitability that these companies are having, and of course their compensation plans tied into that. So I think that, in a sense, gives some credibility to some of this distrust, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and it's one of these things that the research also showed that adults of all generations actually shared markedly negative views, too, and not just the young people, but the problem for the young people is that if they continue to have the skeptical frame of mind, they're going to come into work to our workplaces, and there'll be adjustment difficulties that are more difficult than normal. So business has got to start reaching out to young people, explaining our system, what's good, what's not good about it, and be a lot more transparent about how business makes a profit. I think without doing that, we're just not going to reach these young people, and you'll see when we talk about our comparison to a couple of other countries, the effects of this negativity on business.
So, Stan, what advice do you have for, you know, the real pivotal position in management, you know, the first-line supervisor or the manager who has these Gen Yers or regen people almost reporting to them? How do they help overcome this distrust?
It's actually very simple and difficult at the same time. Listen. Listen to what they have to say. Help them understand why things are the way they are. Be honest with them when you don't agree with how they are, and talk to them about, get their ideas out about how they think things could change. They're really a very malleable group of young people. They want to be mentored, they want to be coached, but they don't want to be duped. They don't want to be told advertising slogans. They want real answers, and they want transparency. And as I say, it's as simple and as difficult as that.
And should we try to be their pals?
I don't think it's a question of being pals. I think that's a mistake, frankly. They are looking for adults who know something more than they do and will help them with their legitimate questions. So I think there's a role for a mature adult, not a buddy.
And so what I hear, I guess, and I just want to clarify this, are they more willing to accept a mentorship from people than, let's say, the previous generation?
Well, I believe so. The work we did over about a 10-year period, which started with Xers and moved to Gen Ys, showed that there's an increasing interest, well over 50%, both males and females, in having mentors. They know that they don't know everything, but they're looking for someone to give them straight talk.
And so it's that listening, it's that communication, it's really, in a sense, paying some attention, too.
Yeah, they're used to being paid attention to. And I've had some colleagues say, well, they've got to learn that the world doesn't revolve around them. They know that already. We don't have to go out of our way to show them that. But the interesting contrast for them is that we've encouraged them to speak their mind. We've encouraged them to stand up for themselves. And then when they get in the business world, they're told to be quiet and follow the rules. And that sort of what's called cognitive dissonance is a problem.
It's a big disconnect, isn't it?
It's a big disconnect.
Stan, I thought it was interesting, too, that you indicated how Gen Y is a consumer generation. And we're going to come up on a break here soon in the next minute and a half or so. But I wondered if you could begin the dialogue about that. Why is this, and what are some of the implications coming from this?
Well, in the last 40 years, we've moved from being a manufacturing society to a knowledge-based society, and that simply has meant that we've taught our young people consumerist behavior, to question value, demand and expect high quality, easy-to-handle, microwavable experiences. And with this background, you can see they've come into the workplace and they expect the same thing to happen. And also that this profound implications that this employee group will not be passive and accept things just because management said it. They want, once again, transparency and dialogue with the leaders.
So again, it's that reaching out, it's that connection with them.
Exactly right.
That's an interesting comment. And again, I think for our listeners today, there's some easy steps that they can simply put into place to make that work without having to request additional monies to do that. Stan, let's pick up this topic of decoding the generational differences when we come back from our commercial break. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. Our guest today is W. Stan Smith, the author of Generational Differences, What Every Leader Needs to Know. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Stay connected. Sign up for our newsletter. Go beyond your favorite Voice America shows. Visit iradioblog.com.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com
or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
Have you heard about sustainable investing? Simply put, it's investing in companies that commit to a resource to enhance the quality of life so it is not depleted or permanently damaged. And that means that resource will be around to benefit for the future. Join host Kara McMillan for Demand More, a program that will take you behind the scenes of sustainable investing. You'll learn to create wealth and feel great about it. In this economic period, you can lead, follow, or run away. It's your choice. Tune in Tuesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker. And today on Leadership Leverage, we're talking with W. Stan Smith. Stan is the author of the best-selling book entitled Decoding Generational Differences, Changing Your Mindset Without Losing Your Mind. And Stan, before we went to a commercial break, I wanted to get into another important aspect here of your book, and that really gets into some of the data that you have, the research that you did, and also from your consulting experience on some of the biggest issues that boomers and Gen Xers have about Gen Y. And then, of course, the reverse of that, what some of the Gen Yers have about the boomers. So I wonder if you could dialogue about that with us.
Sure. The topics is an interesting one, and I recently was involved with a webinar that had about 50 or 60 senior HR people on it, and I asked them these questions, and I thought you might be interested in hearing what they said.
And we are, please.
I listed four items, five items, and I said, give me the most irritating thing about Gen Ys of these five things for you. The first thing was they asked too many questions. Next, I said they don't act appropriately in business, unwilling to pay their dues, don't understand the need for process, and expect to be coddled in the workplace. So there were five items. So
okay.
These mainly Boomer and Gen X executives said that 20% of them said that the Gen Y, the worst thing about them was they don't act appropriately.
20%, and what does that mean?
Huh?
What does that mean?
Well, apparently they don't take, they asked, that tied in with asking too many questions.
Okay.
Or perhaps maybe not dressing the way people would like, or perhaps having piercings or tats or whatever, but it was a whole mixture of things. It was very interesting. As we got into the discussion, it all got mixed up, kind of emotional a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that 20% of them thought they were unwilling to pay their dues. 20% said they don't understand the need for process. That's that microwavable process thing, you know. And finally, 40% said that the Gen Y expected to be coddled in the workplace. Coddling apparently to some people meant asking questions that they didn't think that they thought the kids ought to already know the answers to. This is kind of an interesting thing that I think business leaders need to say. If these four or five things irritate them, should they irritate them? You know, I mean,
that's right.
You know, these young people are new to the business world, and the gap between where they came from and where they're going is quite large, and really we in business have to be, I think, a bit more flexible in helping these Gen Y young people adapt to business.
Mm-hmm.
And so the flip side was, what the problems do Gen Ys have with boomers and some Xers?
That's
and
right.
Those are think that boomers in particular think they're cool, but they're not. This is suggested.
Okay.
They expect loyalty, but don't give it in return. Boomers are resistant to change in work practices. don't take responsibility for the problems they've created, and technologically challenged, but won't admit it, try to fake it. So in terms of only 6% thought the biggest problem with boomers was that they were cool, thought they were cool, but they aren't. About 20% said they expected loyalty, but didn't give it in return. But the big one was 60% said that boomers and certain Xers were resistant to change in the workplace, and the other two were pretty much not taking responsibility and technologically challenged were minimal. So I think the thing there is, there's probably some truth to that, and that gets back to the technology and a lot of other things. And once again, my takeaway for business people is listen to what they have to say if they have a critique about how you do business. You don't have to buy into it, but listening and trying to see if there's some wisdom there is not a bad strategy.
Agree. I think what you're saying is be open again and allow them to have a voice, which may just be accented in this particular generation, but I think was probably true to different degrees across the generations.
Well, I definitely think it is. It's just that this generation is a lot more vocal, and for one reason, we trained them to be. I mean, this is kind of an interesting situation. Some cases, these are our children coming to work for us.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
One colleague said to me that he told his kids to speak up for themselves, but since they ignored him on everything else, he didn't expect them to take him up on this.
Spoken like an experienced father, I can tell. Stan, do you see these generational differences playing out across the globe? I know you've been involved your work has taken you globally in the same way as it plays out here in the United States?
Well, with the help of the Institute for the Future, which is based in Palo Alto, California, we did some work looking at Chinese, Indian, and American youth 14 to 24 years old. Now, let me first say that it's misleading to sort of willy-nilly overlay North American generational views on the rest of the world. But through this kind of surveying that we did, we found that the attitudes of these young people are closer to Western youth than you might expect. And so what does that mean? And it means that these young people in all three countries look for flexibility at work. They expect to be well paid. They expect to have the best technology at hand. They expect transparency from leaders, and they want to operate in a fun working environment. And isn't that interesting? We found something over nearly 90% of Chinese youth felt that the work environment ought to be fun. Something like 80% of the Indian young people felt the same way. And the U.S. kids were the lowest at 60%.
Now, you wouldn't think that would be the case. You would have thought that the U.S. would have been the highest.
The one thing that was a real surprise is the only meaningful differences are that USA youth show considerably less interest in business-related careers than compared to China and India. And the other thing is that Chinese and Indian parents exert much more supervision over their children's use of the Internet than USA parents do. And so I think that was a surprise.
Stan, can we go back to your comment from the research about that they want to have fun in the workplace? What does that look like?
Well, that's a very good question because we intentionally did not define it. But we could tell from the context of some focus groups that were taken in India and China, it meant an environment where they could feel comfortable and be productive, not a formal, strict environment.
So again, it's this, as I said earlier, it's having the job parameters spelled out, but that they're fairly wide. There's some flexibility there, as you just said, as opposed to maybe a traditional workplace that had several rules and regulations or even set times when one would go on a coffee break.
I agree with that. I think that the change we have not made generally is one from an industrial environment where people were making widgets, and you could do that on a schedule, and it's probably best as you do it on a schedule, and knowledge workers where creativity can happen at any time, and there's no particular need for this kind of regimentation in the workplace.
No, in fact, I think it becomes unhealthy, and I think that's what your research is saying, too, for these new leaders here. Stan, any kernel of insight as to why there is not a differentiator between the countries? In a sense, you know, the world is supposed to be round, but I guess it's becoming flat here.
It is. It's technology is the main situation, because you can see other people, you can see what they look like, hear how they feel, talk with them, interact with them. It's the technology is the great democratizer with a small d. And I think that's really the issue. And also, I think that humans are more the same than they are different, if you want to know what I mean, in terms mm-hmm. of what they expect. To have the Chinese, who are from a nominally communist country, say that they expect transparency from their leaders is really remarkable.
It is, isn't it? And I mean, that's got to be just some surprising data that you uncovered at the time of doing this research.
Well, let me give you another thing that's surprising, is that a career in banking and finance is the number three career choice in China and number four in India, but number seven in the U.S., and the percentage selecting this career is five times higher in China and three times higher in India than it is the U.S. How about
Stan,
that?
What is the number one choice for the U.S.?
Well, of the list we had here, which is not completely inclusive, but healthcare, medicine, teaching, IT-related, and law sort of form a group that are about 50%.
Very interesting. Stan, we need to take a commercial break, and when we come back, I want to continue our dialogue on this interesting topic of decoding generational differences. This is your host, Dr. Robert Denker. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. Stay with us.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between, discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv. TV now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Denker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Denker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker. And today on Leadership Leverage, we're talking with Stan Smith, whose best-selling book is entitled Decoding Generational Differences, Changing Your Mindset Without Losing Your Mind. Stan, coming back now from commercial break, I wanted to ask you a statistic that I found in your book that I found very surprising. And you indicated that from now until 2015, that workers age 55 to 64 will be the fastest growing segment of the labor force. What are the implications of this?
Well, as you know, that this is the boomer cohort moving through the system to retirement. The implication to me is there's no real shortage of talent if we begin to use older, experienced workers creatively. But most businesses, in my experience, resist rethinking job content to go to possible job sharing and that sort of thing. It's sometimes, Rob, like we don't want to really solve problems because the answer is fairly easy. We have young people who want to be mentored and coached. We have experienced people who want flexible arrangements and know how to work. And we could get the two together, I think we could have a very productive economy.
Well, I do too. And I think that some of the individuals who may be wanting to come back in the workplace after, let's say, having a career of 30 plus years may really have similar attitudes to the Gen Yers in terms of how they want their work organization to be.
I concur with that, and certainly what our research showed is I've talked to some people who wanted to come back. In fact, we have one statistic that shows 50% of the people who want to come back to work after perhaps they've retired or whatever want to do it in something else, that they some new area. So the attitudes of young people actually are spreading to boomers who are for us.
Isn't that interesting? And I think a good thing. Let's talk about the future a little bit more here. And as you look toward the future, however you define it, can you tell us what you think the next generation of leaders, these Gen Yers, what they're going to look like?
Well, it's interesting. We did some work on that, and I'll say a couple of things before I get into the sort of eight quick things that they want to do. I call the eight intentions. Is okay. That they feel that how they want to lead is very different from boomers. But there, as one young entrepreneur said, if I told my boomer angels how I'd like to run my business, they wouldn't give me the money. So they're wondering whether the business will let them do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
About that. So one of the things is, the first thing is they want to lead by active attention. And the young leaders that we interviewed describe themselves as flourishing in an environment of active attention by their bosses, and they want to give that to their people. They want to be transparent. That's the second thing. The third thing is they want to make everyone's work more relevant and seek ways that everyone feels like, whether it's the secretary or the CEO, feels they're making a difference. They have a strong belief that all members of the team should have an opportunity to make tangible effect. They want to make work continually relevant for themselves, and so that's what I call the do-it-yourself approach. They're trying, particularly the more ambitious ones, are trying to have multiple careers within one company. They want to be passionate about their work, and this is the next one's very interesting. They want to lead in a way that shares both risk and reward. Ironically, some of the Gen Y leaders that I interviewed were uncomfortable taking on the mantle of leadership, even as they were leaders, because their traditional view of leadership is arrogance, hierarchy, and they don't want to be associated with that. So Gen Y are interested in leadership, just not some of the styles that they've seen.
So Stan, are you saying that as they become leaders, that what might be called the power gap between the senior level and the rest of the workforce will narrow, even in terms of decision responsibility or compensation, remuneration?
That's the way they see it. They certainly do. Because they work in a networked kind of way, which shares leadership, and there's not then the call for the gaps that currently exist in power and remuneration.
And Stan, is there anything else that you're seeing that you can share with us as you look into the future of what this generation of leaders will look like?
Right. Flexibility keeps coming up. They want to make sure that they expect leaders to acknowledge their commitment by giving them a measure of authority or flexibility over their work styles and schedules. That's what they expect, and that's what they will offer to the people who work for them. And finally, they want to take care of themselves because they think it's good for an organization. So they're they're a little bit put off if the people in the C-suite don't take care of themselves in terms of exercise and lifestyle. And so they very much want to follow a healthier lifestyle than they've seen the leaders to date.
And that's an interesting goal that they have, isn't it? I mean, quite different than the model that we saw perhaps growing up on television or in the movies of actors who were playing executives, right?
That's right. And I think that one of the interesting things is that they believe very much the person should be allowed to do whatever it is in the free time that gives them or regenerates them. I was in a meeting once where there was a panel of Gen Ys, and the partners, my colleagues listening, were very supportive when a couple of young people said they wanted to spend more time with their family. And then a third fellow, who was an outstanding performer, said, well, the way that I want to devote my free time is I'm an expert surfer, and I want to surf. That's where I collect my thoughts. And some of my colleagues said, well, that's not what we had in mind when we talk about flexibility and family orientation. I said, well, but that's the way they think. This fellow, privately later, he says, you know, the day will come when I probably will get married and I'll have a different set of views. But until then, I want the flexibility to, without risking my career, be able to take time off. Where some people go home to coach a little league team, I want to go ski or surf.
And what a great example of that transparency in that statement, because they're willing to talk out loud what perhaps many other previous generations felt that it wasn't their place to be that transparent on issues like this.
Agreed.
Interesting. Stan, is there what else do you need to share with our listeners today about the research, your experiences that you've put into the book? What else do we need to know before
our... And then a final comment.
Sure.
First, some will say that making changes like we're talking about are nice to do's, but not need to do's. And one guy asked me once, how bad could it be if we continue to conduct business as usual? And I said, well, it will be a quiet Armageddon for you. And in other words, an organization that doesn't pay attention to these seven changes may not see a diminution of people coming through their door. They may not even see a lot of people leaving, but what they will see are people who quit on the job, who are less alert, who don't understand the market. And then the day will come when you may have to merge or go out of business, and you won't know what happens. So that's what my view is, that these are irreversible realities we can't avoid. And then finally, all of us, especially we are business leaders, have to become much more willing to communicate, especially with Gen Y, without judging or assuming that people should know something, how to behave or what have you, when no one's taken the time to tell them. The analogy I think we should keep in mind is that we as older adults are on the same bus as these younger people. Some people who are older helped us on the bus, taught us how to drive the bus, and now we're helping these young people drive the bus. And that has helped them be successful. And so this kind of openness in approaching others as colleagues instead of indulging in power games will help us create a future where all generations will want to be, and not incidentally, I think, a future filled with commercial success.
Well, I couldn't agree more with you. Stan, for our listeners that want to learn more about this topic and learn more about the great research work that you've done and maybe a question that they'd like to have you answer to contact you, how do they go about that?
My website is wstantonsmith.com, and my book is available through that URL and through Amazon.
Very good. Well, Stan Smith, I want to thank you for being part of Leadership Leverage today. It was a very interesting show about the topic of decoding generational differences, and I really appreciate the time that you've spent with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And I want to thank all of our listeners for being part of Leadership Leverage. Until we meet again on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, this is your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and the doctor is out.
Thank you again for tuning in to Leadership Leverage this afternoon. Please tune in again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition of Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker on the Voice America Business Channel. Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.